our affairs. Thank you for letting me lead.
Thank you so much, Ella. And today we will hear a talk on step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So please help me give a warm welcome to our speaker, Alonzo from Calabasas, California. Come on in, Alonzo.
Hi, my name's Alonzo. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm actually in Woodland Hills, not Calabasas. Not that it matters. I'm moving this weekend to, and it's funny to speak on this meeting today in the midst of moving, which I have been told is one of the three most stressful things you can do in your life. It is definitely a pain in the ass. So if I seem a little off, that's why I'm dealing with that and dealing with movers and dealing with other things. So getting back to the step, my sobriety date is March 15th, 88. I just celebrated 36 years of sobriety. Don't get too excited. As a friend of mine always says, 36 years of sobriety, not marred by one day's spiritual growth. So, you know. My buddies, we have a way of keeping each other humble as we do things. Step 11 is interesting for me. So when it comes to meditation, and I've tried it numerous times throughout my sobriety, I've never been one of those people that can just sit quietly for, you know, 10, 20, or 30 minutes. You know, what the various ways people do it, various forms of silent, concentrated meditation have never really worked for me. I've never been able to quiet my mind in that position. I have other ways I meditate. Reading is meditation for me, reading certain spiritual things. And we were talking about it before the meeting. So I got a dog. My dog's He's just a little over three. I got him a little over 3 years ago. And one of the things, and it took me a little while to realize this, but one of the great things about having a dog is they are always in the moment. It's how they live. They're not worried about tomorrow. They're not worried about yesterday. My guy in particular, he's laying here next to me sleeping right now. That is his number one activity. It's kind of like if he's in the same room as me and he's sleeping, he's good. And I learn a lot from that. I had to go to another city to get my dog when he was a puppy. And the day before I was going to pick him up, I was kind of stressed and I was kind of nervous. And a friend of mine, she said something that really centered and really hit home with me. She said, "He's not worried at all." And that brought me to the moment. It's like, yeah, he's not worried. So, you know, I don't need to worry. One of my meditations, one of my times that is meditative to me, when I get up in the morning, I have in my bedroom, I have a giant chair and ottoman. It's one of those chair and a half things. And I just sit on it and stroke my dog, just rub his back. And he sits. I have a Great Dane. If you've ever seen them, they can sit like people on chairs. They just back up and they drop their butt on the chair. And he just sits on the ottoman and I'm just rubbing his back. And it really is, it's perfectly quiet and it's very centering. It gets me in the moment with him. It's good for me to start my day that way. So my day starts. Prayer has been a habit from the beginning of my sobriety. When I first got sober, they told me every day when you get up, ask God to help you stay sober that day. When you go to bed, thank him for keeping you sober that night. A friend who speaks sometimes told me it can be as simple as wake up and say, "Okay, I'm ready." And at night before you go to bed, just say, "Enough." So The point being, and I really appreciate it, the guys who taught me this, the guys who gave me this program, my first sponsor, he let me know that God, that door is a wide door. That door is a wide door and it's open, and you find what works for you and develop your relationship with God. And it can be a very personal thing. It can be organized or not organized. What has happened to me over time, I have developed a different concept of God, and it took a long time for me to do it. I was raised in a Christian church. I believe when that's imprinted on you at a young age, it stays with you. At least it stayed with me. But there was something unsatisfying about it. Organized religion does not work for me. I can't connect through it. What I've discovered, and let's see, I'm looking at the time, so I see how much of this story to go into. So let me back up and tell you, I had a major career change in sobriety. I was an airplane mechanic. That's what I did that for years. And then at about 5 years, well, at about 3 years sobriety, I got a job and I started training new mechanics. And what happened was, I've always had a sense of humor. I always had the ability to make people laugh, but I had never gotten in front of people. And when I got in front of people and was teaching a class, I found out it was very natural for me to speak to a group. I'm not intimidated by it. I'm not afraid of it. I know it's a huge fear people have. I am actually more comfortable talking to a group than I am to an individual. So you put these two things together, the ability to make people laugh and getting in front of people. And after a couple of years of teaching, I decided I wanted to do stand-up. And I did. I switched. And a lot of friends in the program, led by my sponsor at the time, encouraged it. From the first time I did it, and there were a lot of sober friends at this first show I did, and this one particular guy, Charles, who was one of my heroes in early sobriety, when I walked off the stage, he said, "Man, it looks like we finally found out what God meant for you to do." Now, there was 100% that feeling. And that happened at 5 years of sobriety. So I consider myself one of the lucky ones in the sense that when we say don't leave before the miracle happens, I know exactly when my miracle happened. I mean, everything changed, and I describe it. I tell people today I live a dream I didn't have when I came to this program. I've been doing stand-up for a little over 30 years. I have experienced things I never would have imagined in my life. I've traveled the world numerous times. I've met all kind of interesting people, talented people. I'm okay, you know, financially and in other areas that I never was going to be okay. You know, I went through a bankruptcy early in my sobriety, and I'm an alcoholic, so I'm a fatalist. So when I went through a bankruptcy, I was never going to have credit again. I was never going to have a car. I was never going to, you know, fill in the blank. I was never going to do it. I have all of that now. As a matter of fact, in buying the house I'm moving to, in the ultimate of ironies, I was fighting them because my credit score is high and I have money in the bank. And they were asking me all these dumbass questions about how I make my money and this or that, the other. And it was like, you know, I have the money now. Like, there was a time when I'd have to hustle. And believe me, I hustled and I'd talk my way into stuff. It's like, no, now it's all legit. And I have a business manager, a big believer in outside help. Okay, there's a whole team around me that keeps me going. But my business manager, who handles all this, even she was saying, this is utterly ridiculous. And we finally got it done. Believe me, it was a complete hassle. But the point being that I have achieved all of these things. Okay, economic insecurity left a long time ago. And I know I'm lucky to have that, and so on. All of this to say, the change in my God, and I just, it came along through time, is a creative spirit. And I quite often consciously, rather than God, say creative spirit, because when I'm in my creativity, that's when I feel I'm at my best. That's when I'm at my most connected. And there are definitely times when I'm working or doing something where creativity is coming out of me and I'm not even consciously thinking about it. It's just happening. And being in that moment, I'm totally in the moment and not thinking about any external things. And so I have I now that is my God now. My God has changed in sobriety to a creative spirit. And I believe in that, and I'm comfortable with that, and I am connected through that. So that is my prayer, and that is how my God has changed. The other area of meditation for me, and again, these are things that I don't know where you guys are in your sobriety, but if you're newer, give it time because I think these things come with time, and I think the mind quiets with more sobriety. And I'll speak for myself. I become so much more aware of what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, what's going on with me in any given moment over time as the other concerns, worries, etc., the other things in my life became more settled. It allowed me to focus and listen and feel and be more conscious of what's going on with me. Love motorcycles. I've always loved motorcycles from when I was a kid. I've been riding since I was 18. So that's a little over 40 years I've been riding. It is meditative. There are times when I'm on a bike and I'm riding, and things come into my head that I'm not thinking about or whatever. And they're good ideas, whether it be something, for work, creative for my act or something like that, or just excuse me, or just how to do something, like now and when I'm in the process of moving and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, pack this and then do that and then do this. You can schedule this way and it works. These things come into my mind, but I'm not thinking about them. And it's probably because when I'm riding, I'm focused on riding. And I'm focused on, I live in LA. Listen, riding a motorcycle in LA is like playing a giant game of Frogger. Okay. They're out to kill you at all times. So you have to be hyper aware of all the cars and people around you. I have a personal thing with Teslas. Don't like them at all. If I see a Tesla around me, I figure the driver's not driving it. They have it in automatic, and the car's intention is to kill me. but by focusing the mind on one thing, and I don't know how many of you have experienced this, but I've read about this, and it is true. If you focus your mind on something, the subconscious, other parts of your mind, I can't explain it, scientifically, work on these other things in your, in the back of your head, these other problems or whatever, and you get a clarity or you get an idea about these things. A friend of mine who is a brilliant Grammy-winning musician, composer, artist, he used to work with Miles Davis. And he said, Miles Davis told him, when you wake up, when you're in that period between your eyes open and being fully awake, that's the most creative time you'll have. He said, and you come up with ideas then, and then you're fully awake, and then your brain's like, ah, that's not going to work. And you're like, no, that's going to work. Write that down. That's the good idea. So I have that same kind of experience, not all the time, but sometimes when I'm riding, when I'm just not thinking about something, and then the idea comes to me. And then, hopefully, when I stop, I still remember the idea and I can write it down. I'm not driving a Tesla, so I can't write on my phone while I'm driving. They do that. I've seen them. They put their iPad on the steering wheel and roll down the highway. I know there's some Tesla owners in this meeting. I don't like you. The other thing, And I'm going to extend this 11th step of prayer and meditation because I believe part of this, or part of the result of this, is comfort. Part of this is dealing with life. I was told one of the definitions of sobriety, mental sobriety, is the ability to be comfortable with unsolved problems. So I'm going to extend this step into that type of thinking and say that part of it is a sense of humor. I know when I'm past a problem, when I can laugh about it. I am not in any way a spiritual giant. Okay. I've been sober a long time. I am fortunate that the obsession has been lifted. My solution to a problem is no longer to pick up a drink or a drug. I still have escapes. There are still times when I don't want to deal with it. There are times when I literally have to shut down. I've learned to allow myself to do that. But when I'm laughing about it, when I can talk about the problem and make it funny, when I can look back and laugh at whatever happened, that's when I know I'm over it. That's when I know I'm okay. Another thing, and I'm definitely aware of it, and it's become more and more over time being aware of it, like, yeah, okay, I'm all right with that. But initially, no, I do not like, listen, I'm an alcoholic, okay? One of the things that they taught me about me and about alcoholics, and is that, you know, we're rebels, we gotta do things our way. I can't conform, blah, blah, blah. I am the biggest creature of habit. Alcoholics, we have our habits, we have our rituals, we have our way of doing things. And if the slightest thing disturbs that, my whole day is shot. I am angry. I am off, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that. I have little patience for people. I have little patience for ineptitude and inefficiency. And one of the reasons for that, maybe this is personal, maybe this is selfish, this is less than ultimately spiritual. And then this, I'm talking about dealing with institutions and people who work at institutions, the worst for me. I have no patience for it, et cetera. Well, it's because, and again, this is personal, so you can judge me on this and say I'm wrong. I'm not, but you can say it, whatever gets you through the day. I have a job, I'm in a career that I'm not allowed to do a bad job. I can't just say, oh, people pay to see me entertain them, and they expect me to do the best, you know, in that moment. And I gotta be funny. That's what they came to see. So I can't say, oh man, I was dealing with the movers today, or, you know, I broke up with my girlfriend, or, you know, and again, I say this to tell you behind the scenes, because I'm certainly not the only comic to have done this, but this is what we do. I've had deaths, you know, that day. Someone died. I got to be funny that night because that's already booked and people paid. And I also love what I do, and I take a pride in what I do. And for that reason, when I call customer service, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear why you can't. I don't care if you're having a bad day. I don't give a shit. You know, do a good job, because I have to do a good job. So I hold people to that standard. Well, that's kind of difficult when you fly on airlines every week. And when you deal with, like I said, dealing with, you know, loan brokers, or dealing with whatever else, you know, we all deal with this stuff, right? We've all had to press one, then press two, then put in your account number, then press two again, then wait. And then someone comes on and they ask you for the account number you already entered, and this and that. We all deal with that now. It is annoying. It is annoying as hell. I have a niece who's on the other side of those phone calls, and she gets upset when people are mad. And I told her, do you have any idea how much we go through before we talk to you? Do you understand why we're angry by the time we get to you? You know? So, getting back to step 11, this is what prayer and meditation is about. My first sponsor told me, he said, we come in here so we can deal with out there. Prayer and meditation, trying to maintain a conscious contact with God, trying to quiet my mind, even if it's just for those few minutes in the morning or whatever, helps me get through the day. It helps me deal with. I've only had one negative encounter, and I was really surprised by it, and it really bothered the hell out of me regarding God and prayer and meditation in this program. And I was sharing, and like I shared earlier in this, you know, organized religion doesn't work for me. Listen, it works for a lot of people. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, from my experience, right, that's all I can share. It doesn't work for me. And this guy came up to me after the meeting and started talking to me about Christianity and what's right. Hey, knock it off. Knock it off, buddy. And sorry about that. Hey, settle down. Someone's at the door. It's bugging them. Oh, come here. Shut up. I got 5 more minutes. Anyway, this guy started talking to me about Christianity and what was so-called right. And I stopped him right away. And I was like, no, not here. Not in this program. In this program, I'm a strong believer. Whatever works for you is what you believe. And other than if you're dealing with your sponsor, or maybe, you know, you have a home group and they have some kind of, I don't know, way of doing it or whatever. Otherwise, no. Nobody tells somebody else what their God should be, who their God should be, how they should do it. It's, again, in 36 years, only once have I had that happen. But it instantly, hey, knock it off, buddy. Knock it off. Instantly turned me off. And I knew he was wrong. And all I could think is, how, stop. All right, settle down. Sorry about that. All I could think about was how dangerous that would have been had I been new. Can you imagine being new, coming into this program, trying to get it, and someone telling you you're wrong about God? How dangerous is that? I think we have to be aware. Part of the consciousness is being conscious of others. Okay? And Hulk, enough. Hey, stop it, all right? Sorry about that. Part of it is being conscious of others, and I need to be conscious of what I say, and I need to be conscious of how it affects others, and I need to respect other people's belief and experience. And this, again, it comes with time, it comes with meditation, it comes with quiet. There's a lot to be learned in the quiet. There's a lot to be learned thinking. Over time, instincts are an interesting thing with alcoholics, because when I came in here, my instincts were wrong. My instinct was, if there's a problem, I need a drink, I need a drug. My instincts, my emotions were anger. I dealt with a lot of things through anger because I didn't know how to deal with them in any other way. My instincts were more often wrong than right. You know, there's an old saying that, yeah, my best thinking got me here. You know, all my brilliant ideas, I ended up in AA. So maybe those weren't such brilliant ideas. But over time in sobriety, I have to learn to trust my instincts, and I have to realize that in a lot of ways, my instincts have changed, and that little voice in my head that says, do this or do that, is right, because I've changed. I've learned over the years. I've experienced, I've read, I've listened, I've shared, I've been listened to people share people's experience, etc. I've changed over time. My instincts have changed over time, and then I learned to trust them more. And I'm in that place now. Now, there are some areas where still I'm always teachable. I'm not perfect, but I will learn lessons. I was told a long time ago the thing about, you know, when I'm new, I got to bang my head into the wall a lot before I realize that wall is an opening. Now, one good hit, and I'm like, okay, that ain't going to work. You know, it changes. If you're new and your mind is zipping all over the place and you can't sit still and you got to do whatever, yeah, that's okay. That's part of it. Physical activity was huge when I was new. Went to the gym a lot, worked out a lot just to get rid of that energy, right? Because I had to. So when we talk about prayer and meditation, when I talk about, I'm going to speak for myself, when I talk about prayer and meditation, I'm not talking about becoming the monk who can sit quietly on the mountaintop and eternally experience things. Some people can do that. Some people have ways of doing that. But it's a wide door. It's a wide door. It takes effort. It takes repeated effort. I told you I've tried various forms of meditation at various times in my sobriety. I believe in outside help. There are tons of books about it. And now you can go online and there are different, you know, groups and even apps on how to meditate, how to calm your mind, how to quiet, how to relax, et cetera, et cetera. That's all out there. And a lot of it's good stuff. So if you find it there and it works for you, that's okay. That's okay. The important thing that I was taught is to do it, is to do it. Like so many other things in sobriety, the greatest teacher for me has been repetition. The greatest habit for me has been repetition. Praying every day, I think that is an integral part of what's kept me sober all of these years. And they said, just do it every day. You know, they, in the beginning, they were like, you don't even have to believe it. Just do it. Just the act of doing it. And I understand that. I understand why they taught me that. And I believe that. I'm going to leave you with, I'm not telling you how to pray. I'm not telling you how to meditate. I'm not telling you who or what to pray to, but I'm telling you to do it because it works. And if you're newer and you're like, I can't, blah, 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 remember, this is step 11. There are 10 steps before this to help clear your mind, clear your life up, et cetera, so that when you get to 11, you're ready to start looking for some peace and some meditation and some sanity. Okay, I have been restored to sanity. I cannot tell you exactly when it happened. I can tell you that it's a whole lot better than it was. Thank you for asking me to speak at this meeting, and thank you for letting me share.